supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Support for Voices in the Family is made possible in part by the generous support of Devereaux, the nation's largest nonprofit provider of behavioral health care for children, adolescents, and adults with developmental and intellectual disabilities, behavioral disorders, and mental illness. Devereaux operates at 15 centers in 11 states throughout the country.
I'm Dan Gottlieb. Thanks for listening to Voices in the Family. Same-sex marriage is now permitted in a handful of states. This was barely a seed of an idea not long ago, and now gay couples can imagine a future that's as legal as anything heterosexual couples have enjoyed, or maybe not enjoyed. There's excitement about this, but there's also uncertainty. And on today's show, we're going to explore both. We'll talk about the legal ramifications of state-recognized gay marriage with attorney Angela Giampolo, and we'll find out what gay couples are saying to psychotherapist and author Dr. Joe Court. But first, let's hear from some couples. Our producer, Jennifer Lynn, takes us to the home of TV producer Jive Rivas and attorney Lindsay Perry of North Philadelphia. They met through mutual friends, and even though they were both hesitant to get into a relationship, they soon realized they were perfect for each other.
I love Jive. She is the perfect yin to my yang. Is that correct? She calms me down. Anytime I'm having an issue or I'm frustrated, she reminds me that there's more to life than just your career or a family problem. So she's a really good person to talk to.
Just like she said that I calm her, she makes me more assertive, because sometimes I can be a pushover. I needed to learn to stand up for myself more, and I feel like I'm learning that with her.
Jive and I have trust no matter what I'm going through. She is there for me, and I think that goes a long way.
The day of the proposal, I was working in Florida, having one of the most hellish jobs ever. And she flew down to visit. I took her to Disney World. We're on the carousel. I'm falling asleep. I'm like, Linz, we have to go back to the hotel because I need to go to bed soon. And I'm falling asleep. So she...
Well, this whole time,
yeah,
I have the ring wrapped in red paper because it's February. It's Valentine's Day weekend leading up to.
It's the day before.
Yeah. I'm thinking, you know, what ride do I want to do this at? This is the one shot I have in life. Oh, my gosh. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to hold out.
Then we went back to the room, and you can go from there.
I just quickly grabbed the package out of my bag and kind of got down on a semi-one knee, and I just simply asked her, you know, I really love you, and I'd like you to stay with me for the rest of my life. Will you wear this ring as my partner?
I said, of course. I mean, she said, I want to spend the rest of my life with you, and I was like, yay, that's exactly what I want.
My wedding dress would be simple, white with blue. It's been my favorite color since I was a little kid. Probably navy blue because of Penn State, which is where I went. So yeah, just a simple white dress with some blue bridesmaids. It's kind of what I'd imagined.
And what do you want me in?
My picture is her in this sexy feminine white suit with a blue shirt underneath. I think that would be great.
As far as like when we want to get married or how we're going to get married or what we're going to do, or are we going to leave the state and do it? We haven't gotten too in-depth with that. I think we both agree that we don't want to just do it just to do it. Like, there has to be something else kind of political behind it for us. So we're waiting to see what the climate is going to be like in the next couple of years. I would like it to be a national thing. Will that happen in the next 5 years? I don't know.
That was... Producer Jennifer Lynn speaking with Jive Rivas and attorney Lindsay Perry of North Philadelphia. They were talking about their relationship and their feelings about marriage. Joining us now in the studio are Charlie Burris and Sander Schlichter. Charlie, welcome.
Thank you.
Thanks
and
for having
Sander,
us.
Sander, welcome. Charlie is a retired nurse and a fine artist. and Sanders, an anesthesiologist, the two share a life and a home in suburban Philadelphia. I'm also joined here in the studio by Angela Giampolo. She's an attorney with Giampolo Law Group, and she blogs at phillygaylawyer.com. Angela, welcome. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Our phone number is 888-477-9499. Again, that's 888-477-9499. If you are a gay couple, married or not, and have some thoughts about this issue, give us a call. And if you are parents of a gay couple or children of a gay couple, we'd like to hear from you also. 888-477-9499. Sander, tell us about the early stages of the relationship and how it
developed. The joke is that we met in prison, but actually we met at Wake Med in Raleigh. I was a medical student. He was a nurse on
Is it variation on prison?
Yes, sort
pretty
of.
Much.
Pretty
medical
much.
Student, sure.
And we started dating, and I figured out pretty quickly this is someone I wanted to spend time with. And about a year into it, when I took the job at Penn that I have now, he surprised me and said he was going to move up to Philadelphia with me, away from all of our friends and family in North Carolina. And that was kind of the first step in saying this is probably going to be a long-term relationship.
Why did you do such a thing, Charlie?
We had a lot of things in common. We were just very compatible. I'd had a couple earlier or previous relationships and just really clicked in a way with Sander that I hadn't with anyone else. And it just felt right.
It was an adventure.
Yep. We lived together for about the last 6 months in Raleigh together. I just wanted to see, you know, if we could do that without killing each other, which was a close call a few times. And then just came up here and, you know, carved out a life. And
tell us, Sander, at what point it began to feel like it was shifting from dating friendly to a more serious, perhaps committed relationship. Do you remember?
Second date. I fell pretty hard pretty quickly. But I think when my apartment flooded and I moved in with him and he offered me to move in with him after dating only about 9 months, I think that's really when I felt this was going to be something. And then, of course, when he decided to move up to Philadelphia, I think that's when this was really, I kind of started considering him my life partner and went from boyfriend to, you know, to I think this is the person I want to build my entire life with and go from there. And after that, every conversation we had about our futures, our careers, his art, what I was going to do after residency was no longer, this is what I want, this is what we want. And that was...
What was that like for you? That shift, that transition?
It was exciting. I said, you know, and my sister, she and her wife live in Massachusetts, so I already had sort of a model of, a relationship. But for me, it was just great to say, this is my partner, you know, this is my, not husband, but someone I consider that, someone who I speak as my other half. And I could openly say that in Philadelphia and at work. And in fact, if you go to my job, people know him better than they know me. Sometimes it's funny when we have our end of the year parties, he takes all the pictures. And so he's in every third picture. Actually, it's funny.
You're exaggerating.
Penn changed the term wife to spouse to partner when I joined the you know, as far as on the roster.
Say that again. Penn changed.
On to say this is the doctor, this is his wife. That's the old way. And then it said spouse. And now when I joined, they used the term partner.
Shift. Tell us, Charlie, about what happened with you when you first began to make that shift from friend, lover, boyfriend.
Someone I'm hanging out with.
I think for me, as was stated earlier, it was Valentine's Day, and it was just a really romantic time. I knew that Sander was a writer in college, and we had gone to the mall, and I got him this really nice writer's box, you know, and I told him that I loved him, and that was about 2 months into our relationship, but I just felt that you know, that overwhelming feeling that you get when it's like, wow, you know, this light bulb went off, and I was just like, you know, I really love you.
And we really love spending time together. I mean, we're best friends, and I think that's the key to any sort of long-term relationship.
Before the show, I was admiring both of your wedding rings, and they are both beautiful and both very different, reflecting, I guess, your both of your personalities. So I want to hear, I'll start with you, Charlie, what do they mean? When did you get them? When did you decide? Tell us.
I think we were in Philly about 2 years, and we had gone to spend the weekend in New York. We had been together a total of about 3.5 years then, and we were going to see his college friends from Dartmouth, and I asked his best friend for Sander's hand, you know, because you always ask the dad, and I'm like, Jake, I think I'm going to propose to Sander, and I have a ring in my pocket. And so it was in New York in front of all of his friends from college.
Mm. Including my ex-girlfriend.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And then...
And then a couple years later, I wanted to get him something really nice. What he got me was great, but I wanted to, when I finished residency and had a first proper paycheck, I've been looking at this ring he has. It's got three nice little diamonds in it. And it was
not
Christmas Eve. We had dinner at Barclay Prime, and I was sweating bullets. He goes, babe, it's just dinner, you know, and I'm like, and we'd already been there before, but I was, you know, had the ring in my pocket, and I was like, you know, one martini, two martinis, and finally we left the nice dinner, and we were in Rittenhouse. It was snowing, and the Christmas tree was there.
The big tree was all lit up.
And I saw that movie.
Yeah, I know.
It was so sappy.
But no, I had this whole speech prepared, and I just leaned out, and I said, you have to stay with me for the rest of your life. It was like,
promise me you won't ever leave me.
Yeah, it was like, it was, my whole speech was dashed, and I just was like, so. It was
just with the snow, and there were people, and they were clapped, and it was just,
And if you know amazing. Me, I'm not that guy, but I was that night.
I'm curious about something. Mm-hmm. You asked Sander's best friend.
Correct.
Why didn't you ask his father?
We weren't really close that, as close as we are now. Sander's father now made us promise that if we did any type of ceremony that they would be included.
Have you had a ceremony?
We have had a very informal,
blessing.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Oh, no, you go ahead. It's your mom's pier.
We were, at my mom's house down in Alabama, and she lives right on the water. And a good friend of ours is an Episcopalian priest, and Santa grew up Episcopalian. So he, at sunset, took us out on the pier, and we knelt, and he just blessed our union. You know, and that was just small and private, but enough to give us, you know, a sense of, you know,
spiritual.
Yeah, a blessing on the relationship, because mm-hmm. I also grew up a preacher's son, so, you know, our religion is very important, you know, to the integral part of our relationship.
Angela, this all begs the question about what does it mean from a legal perspective?
Absolutely. Well, their particular ceremony has no legal bearing, but as we were talking prior to the show, I think the uncertainty, if you will, and the ultimate unfairness to LGBT couples around the country starts with the Defense of Marriage Act, DOMA. Which was enacted in 1996 and basically says that from a federal level, LGBT couples cannot avail themselves to any federal rights.
Because marriage is between a man and a woman.
Exactly. And federally, that is the stance within the United States. And so a lot of people don't realize it, but that means that 1,138 rights are not conferred upon LGBT couples that are married in a civil union or in a domestic partnership. So it's not just a couple. It's a lot.
So what about their relationship?
Mm-hmm.
Do they have any protections?
Well, we were talking earlier. I'm not sure what legal documents. They're within the city of Philadelphia.
Well, we actually live in Lower Marion. I don't know what Montgomery County has. I mean, we have Ben Penn's very generous with their benefits, although I have to pay taxes on them. But we were able to carve out a nice domestic union in southeast Pennsylvania. You know, as far as legally, we have a mortgage, we have joint bank account. You know, we have a will. He's the beneficiary of all of my retirement. You know, but he can't get my Social Security. That's something that, again, that's a federal.
Yeah. Right. Pensions. Social Security. So
we feel pretty secure living in, you know, Penn Valley, Pennsylvania, and working in Philadelphia, but that sort of also, I think, at times has kept me from looking at jobs in other institutions because
correct.
Mm-hmm. I'm happy at my job, but I'm also very secure. We're very secure in our relationship in this part of the country.
Well, you know, we've got to take a short break. I want to come back and pursue these legal issues. And, of course, what triggered the show is the recent ruling, New York. Mm-hmm. So I'd like to talk about that for a little bit. We're talking about gay marriage and not just the status of it. We're going to be talking about that also, but what it means within couples and, you know, between couples. Our number is 888-477-9499. If you've got any thoughts or experiences with or about gay marriage, give us a call. 888-477-9499. My guests on this segment of the show are Charlie Burris and Sander Schlichter. Charlie's a retired nurse and a fine artist. Sander's an anesthesiologist. The two share a life and a home in suburban Philadelphia. I'm also joined here in the studio with Angela Giampolo. She's an attorney with the Giampolo Law Group. She blogs at phillygaylawyer.com. Well, I'm Dan Gottlieb. You're listening to Voices in the Family. That's right here on WHYY-FM.
The Masters in Organization Development and Leadership at St. Joseph's University supports WHYY, designed to provide the theoretical knowledge and practical tools needed to lead change and achieve results in today's complex organizations. Professionals can earn their master's degree while continuing their careers. Information to register for the open house on Tuesday, August 10th from 5 to 7 at sju.edu/higher knowledge. Graduate studies at SJU. Higher knowledge, higher potential.
On the next Fresh Air...
2 o'clock in the afternoon when these babies coming home from school, y'all shoot. For real? This is unacceptable for me to be holding this boy, this young man's obituary.
Amina Matthews is a former gang member who intercedes to stop the cycle of violence in Chicago in the new documentary, The Interrupters. We speak with her and director Steve James. Join us.
This afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
Not right. That's wrong.
Whoa. I heard that music. I couldn't quite place it. I felt my anxiety going up, and now I know why. Great job, Mike. And we're talking about gay marriage today on Voices in the Family. And once I get my bearings after that music, I'll tell you who my guests are. They are Angela Giampolo. She's an attorney with the Giampolo Law Group. She blogs at phillygaylawyer.com. I'm also joined by Charlie Burris and Sander Schlichter. Charlie's a retired nurse and a fine artist. Sander is an anesthesiologist. The two share a life and a home in Montgomery County. Our phone number is 888-477-9499. Give us a call. It's on gay marriage, 888-477-9499. Angela, let's start with you. Mm-hmm. And here in Pennsylvania, from a legal perspective, what's the difference? We hear labels, civil union, gay marriage, domestic partnership.
Right. Well, here in Pennsylvania, we have none of that. Within the city of Philadelphia and in some surrounding counties, Harrisburg and several others, you can enter into a domestic partnership or register as such. But here within the state of Pennsylvania, we can't avail ourselves to any of those. And ultimately, if you're a Pennsylvania resident and leave the state and go get married or enter a civil union right over the bridge, I mean, we can see New Jersey from here. And if we were to go over there and enter into a civil union, it's one of the worst things that you could possibly do.
Why?
Well, and it's funny because I heard Jivey and Lindsay earlier, and I know them both well, and I'll actually see Lindsay later at 5:30. And I think it was Jivey who said, you know, I'm not sure if we're going to go somewhere and get married. And if the listeners take nothing from this, it's that you do not do that. until it is recognized statewide within the state that you live in, do not leave and go get married or unioned or DP'd, as it's called.
Why?
In another state. Because you're entering into a legal relationship that is not recognized in your state, and therefore you can't unwind it. You cannot dissolve it legally unless one of the two people were to move to that state, declare residency for a year, and then petition for the divorce within that state. Hmm. Again, it goes back to DOMA. Because it's, you know, this issue is the only issue we have in the United States. I mean, we all remember from fourth grade, full faith and credit, that anything that happens in one state is recognized by another. This is the one issue within the United States where full faith and credit has been thrown by the wayside, and it's each state out for itself.
So we talked to you before the show, and the thing you brought up pretty quickly was DOMA, Defense of Marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And you brought it up again here today. And, and so we know essentially what it is that defines marriage as between a man and a woman.
Mm-hmm.
There's recently been a lot of news about the Obama administration and their stand on this act. Now, certainly we don't have the political climate to do anything with that law. But what's happening now?
It's been very exciting, honestly. Back in February, Obama issued a presidential directive requesting that the Department of Justice no longer defend the Defense of Marriage Act should its constitutionality be challenged. So his impeachment was sought over that, you know, that there was a separation of balance and powers and the president had no right to tell the judiciary what to do. So that's very exciting. And then, you know, we also have the Federal Marriage Amendment on top of DOMA, which was brought about in 2006. That's where, back when Bush tried to bring about a ban within the Constitution, rewrite the Constitution to ban it. And this is around the same time. I'm Canadian, dual citizen, the U.S. and Canada. And around that same time, Canada rewrote its Constitution to make marriage gender neutral. So you had the Federal Marriage Amendment come about in 2006, and just as of yesterday, Rick Perry, governor of Texas, is sort of bringing that back alive. He wants to see that, you know, again brought to the forefront of politics with the advent of gay marriage in New York. But so to answer your question, another very exciting thing that Obama has done aside from that presidential directive in February. Is he is saying that while he doesn't have a stance on gay marriage, that it's evolving, and that he would support, or he does support, a bill that will allow all the federal rights, the 1,138, to go to married couples within those six states that allow gay marriage. That's huge. I mean, that's another way of repealing DOMA without repealing DOMA. So there's a lot of exciting things.
I read in the New York Times that since gay marriage is legal in New York, some large companies are requiring now couples to be married for their partner to receive health insurance.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of handcuffs gay couples, doesn't it? I mean, some of these large companies, Corning or IBM, Raytheon, they gave domestic partner benefits, and I wonder if, you know, gay couples could lose them unless they got married.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I from a large corporate standpoint, it's very much a logistical issue. I mean, it's hard to come down on it from a legal standpoint. When they started allowing domestic partnership benefits, the additional HR resources that had to, you know, be availed to the employees for them to come in and show their DP status, joint bank accounts, this, that, and the other. So,
or as my friend said, do you have to show video?
Right. Exactly. So I think it's large corporate America basically saying, listen, if you have the right and you're in this committed relationship, then go ahead and do it. But I agree with you from, you know, the flip side of that, it's...
Well, it's interesting that, Penn, you don't have to be married to have benefits. The domestic partner benefits are based on common law marriage. So if you are a heterosexual couple who lived together for 7 years and fulfill a couple other things, you are considered by Penn to be married, or by Pennsylvania, I guess, to be married. And that's what they base those benefits on.
Mm-hmm. And the other issue we were talking about with domestic partnership benefits given by an employer is a lot of time my clients don't necessarily do the cost-benefit analysis on whether they should take them. They're just so excited that they work for a great company that allows them that they go ahead and they take them. But
how do you do those cost-benefit analysis?
You literally, it's added income. So I don't know how much do you know.
Well, for me, it's a no-brainer because Charlie is works independently, so he would have no chance at benefits.
Right.
You know, another line of work.
So it usually comes at play when there's two people who have employers and they can get benefits from each of their employer.
Right.
And so if to the one it's added income of, let's say, $1,800 and you pay taxes on that,
right,
maybe the cost benefit of getting it yourself.
When Charlie was nursing, he sold his benefits back to the hospital for a higher per hour pay. Mm. And that's why we decided to go with the joint benefits.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
And worked out well.
Mm-hmm.
I want to go to the phones. Our number is 888-477-9499. Again, that's 888-477-9499. We are talking about gay marriage today on Voices. And we've got Chris on the line. Hi, Chris. You're on the air.
Hey, Dan. I think the biggest issue for me is I have multiple sclerosis. And my partner and I have been together just about 15 years, just shy of 15 years. And that's probably the biggest and most important thing to me. And the Medicare regulations that came out earlier this year that said, hey, you have to cover anybody who says that they are in a relationship with them is a very big deal. So now that they've done that, I feel a lot better, but the passage of civil unions, I live in Delaware, is a big deal. It's a very big deal, and it's, while, you know, we'd like to share pensions and all that kind of business, the most important thing is the health stuff, and I think it's about time that all that passed.
Yeah, that's a really big deal for you.
Mm-hmm.
Chris, I've got to ask you first, how are you?
I'm good. I know you, Dan. So, I'm in a very good way, you know. But having that reassurance, you know, in the background makes a very big deal.
Yeah.
You know, that's why I wanted healthcare reform so badly, is to, you know, because at any moment I could have an exacerbation or an attack or whatever, and then, you know, and not be covered. And then the mere fact that the other thing that horrified me is to go into the hospital, and then though my I have a great relationship with my parents and my family and everything else, you want that person who knows you and loves you most to be able to make those decisions.
Well, let me turn to Angela. So how does that work with HIPAA?
Mm-hmm. Well, there's in addition, we, and I think you both have these documents as well,
yes,
living
we do.
Will,
medical power of attorney,
right? And what a lot of people don't know is that in addition to the living will, you also need a healthcare proxy. Mm-hmm. So the living will is as Chris was saying, you know, I have these wishes and I want my partner to live them out. But the healthcare proxy is what names you as the person who, you know, is going to live out those wishes that he has decided. And now in certain states, I like to actually have my clients sign HIPAA authorization forms.
Uh-huh.
Because in some states, and I don't want to name quote-unquote bad states, but there are certain states where you don't want to end up if you're gay and traveling and hurt. And
why don't you want to name bad states?
just not to be mean. Well, I'll name them Florida, Texas. You know, I think we all...
anything south of the Mason-Dixon line.
Well,
exactly.
No, but I mean, it's important for our listeners to know where they're best covered.
Absolutely. And if, you know, a lot of my clients have vacation homes in those states, and so I have them execute all these same documents, not the will or, you know, not the main ones, but the ancillary documents in those states. So Rehoboth, Fire Island, you know, down in Florida, you know, wherever they tend to have vacation homes, I'll have all these health documents done by a local council down there just and shrunk down and laminated and put in their wallets so that they're on them at
nice.
All times. But to answer your question about HIPAA, that's an added document that I've been having clients sign because they could say, I'm sorry, due to HIPAA, I can't even talk to you
correct.
About what the issue is. So, you know, it's another potential layer of discrimination.
Mm. Yes, it is. Mm,
that's valuable information. Hey, Chris, thanks for calling in. I'm so glad to hear you're doing well, and I miss you. Let's try to get together again. I love doing this show. You know, I run into old friends. Let's see if we can get another call in before we have to take a break. We've got Florence on the line. Hi, Florence.
Hi.
Hi.
Hello? Hi.
What can we do for you?
Well, I've been with my partner 27 years.
Congratulations.
And we finally got civil union in New Jersey. But I'm calling because I think that the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell is going to really make a difference for all of us. Because when those soldiers come home and want their rights that any other spouse would get, they're not going to get them under federal law. And I think that that's going to help push the federal law to start accepting our relationships.
I completely agree.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I happen to think, your point that your guest made first thing about what state you're in when you get married, we happen to have been in Northampton the day that gay marriage was allowed in Massachusetts. Mm-hmm. And we heard all this noise, and we went to see what was going on, and we had a thought about, should we go ahead and get married right now? And we decided that, you know, we didn't want to be pushed into something like that just because we could, that we should really... It should be where we live and what we need. And we had already had a domestic partnership in New Jersey, and now we have a civil union. They don't call it marriage. They treat it like marriage.
Mm-hmm.
But I work in Philadelphia, and it's not the same.
Mm-hmm.
And for those states out there that do not support us, we've already considered we've not applied for certain jobs and things, or even talked about vacationing in certain states, because we're concerned what would happen if something happened. And the partner who was left behind wouldn't be able to make decisions or... manage things.
Exactly. Exactly.
So there's two different points, but, you know, having lived with this my whole life, just about, we've learned to work the system as best we can, and we're waiting for the government to get their act together.
Exactly. Lots of people are, Florence. Well, thanks so much for your call and the points you bring up. I want to speak with all three of you, because we had a very interesting 30-second discussion during our last break, and I want to conclude this segment by letting our listeners enjoy that discussion. So you brought up, Angela, the question of a cohabitation agreement.
Mm-hmm.
So tell us what that is, and I'm curious about...
Sure. Well, to go back to what the last listener just said in terms of, you know, for those of us who live in Pennsylvania or any of the other states that don't have any sort of legal rights for us, what can we do until, quote unquote, the government gets their act together? And the one thing that you guys both did was, you know, you have a very detailed estate plan in order. And so on the break, I asked, you know, do you also have a cohabitation agreement to go with that?
Which we had not heard of.
Right, right. And a lot of people haven't. And attorneys in my position who are not advocating for their LGBT clients to have a cohab agreement, I think it's borderline malpractice not to.
What is it?
I call it the pre-prenup, right? So we can't get married, so it's not a prenup, but the pre-prenup. And it basically sets down contractually everything that should the relationship end, you know, what's in this contract will go into effect. So you both own property?
Correct.
And you're both on the deeds?
Correct.
Okay. So should the relationship dissolve, you can't get divorced.
Correct.
You just have this property.
Right.
And you'll both have to figure out amicably what to do with that. And chances are, if you just broke up, amicability will not be the number one thing. So there are a lot of Saturdays where I just spend in my office for 12 hours in mediation with my LGBT clients, and I just say, listen, how long have you been together? 12?
Almost 12 years.
Okay. Where I just say to one, channel every bit of love that you have for this person in the last 12 years, and let's settle this. Because if you don't have a cohabitation agreement which says it may talk about your debts and your liabilities, who pays them, who will pay them afterwards. If you own property, that within 6 months one will try to refinance the house and, you know, the other will then live in it and the one will buy the other out, whatever it is. If you cannot decide, that an objective realtor will put the house up. You said you have two homes even.
Correct.
I just dealt with a lesbian couple with this issue, actually. And I'm certified in mediation, so this is an area where I've become a non-lawyer and I just mediate it. But a cohabitation agreement is so simple, and it sets all of that in place. Because, again, you're moving 12 years down a relationship path that, unfortunately, should it end, you have no uniform way to dissolve it and to split
called,
up property.
It's burying him under the pool.
Right.
Or him in the woods. Right.
Can you put that in the agreement? Well, that's a the idea of burying in pools and in the woods is kind of a nice way to end this segment. And in our next segment, we're going to be talking about the nature of relationships with Dr. Joe Court, who's an author and psychotherapist and a sex therapist. He's in Michigan and multiply published. Well, we've got to take our break. Angela, unfortunately, we have to say goodbye to you.
Absolutely.
You've been wonderful.
Thank you for having me. It's been great.
I appreciate your coming down.
Absolutely.
It's been a pleasure for us, too.
All right, thanks. We're going out to dinner, right?
All right.
All right.
Hey, definitely.
Hey.
In you.
Hey. God. My guest has been Angela Giampolo. She's an attorney with the Giampolo Law Group. She blogs at phillygaylawyer.com. Also, here in the studio is Charlie Burris and Sander Schlichter. Charlie's a retired nurse and a fine artist. Sander is an anesthesiologist, and the two share a life and a home in Montgomery County. Like I said, we'll come back. We'll also be talking with Joe Court, an author and psychotherapist. Well, I'm Dan Gottlieb. You're listening to Voices in the Family. It's right here on WHYY-FM.
Do you have love, time, or resources to help one child? Bethany Christian Services, a national nonprofit adoption agency, envisions a world where every child has a loving family. Since 1944, Bethany has provided adoption and foster care services, licensed in more than 30 states, including Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and Delaware. To learn ways to care for vulnerable children in our region and around the world, 800-215-0702 or bethany.org. Bethany Christian Services supports WHYY.
You've probably heard it yourself, that inner voice telling you to go for it or step back. How important is it to trust and follow your instincts? It's been life-changing for some women. Stories of intuition from the August issue of O Magazine. That's next time on Tell Me More.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
We are back on Voices in the Family. I'm Dan Gottlieb, your host. We're talking about gay marriage today on Voices in the Family. We're joined here in the studio with Charlie Burris and Sander Schlichter. Charlie is a retired nurse and a fine artist. Sander is an anesthesiologist, and they share a life and a home in Montgomery County. So we're also joined now by Joe Court. He is an openly gay American clinical social worker, clinical sexologist, author, lecturer, and facilitator of workshops. Joe, welcome to Voices in the Family.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Well, I'd like to play, before we get started, a little essay that you wrote, kind of summarizing everything. So let's play that now and hear what you had to say.
Without legal recognition of their partnerships, many gay and lesbian couples who come to me for counseling say that they felt hidden and discriminated against. The takeaway message is that they, as a couple, are somehow inferior, that they're playing house and not in a real relationship. That said, many who are not comfortable being fully out or who feel they're not safe from judgment and discrimination from family, friends, and employers have found comfort in not being compelled to go public with their relationship. Being under the radar has been safe for them. My clients enter my office buzzing about what legal marriage means for them. It's the longing for recognition and validation that what they have is as meaningful as what heterosexuals have. Others are relieved to be considered legal kin so they can be present for their partners in difficult situations like medical crises. Many want the financial security marriage brings and are relieved to know their children will be protected legally. Being able to provide for each other like this strengthens relationships. But there is a downside for some lesbians and gays as it relates to legal marriage. Some are not ready to come out to their friends, families, and employers. In my office, there's now a rift for some couples. One is ready to marry and be fully out, but the other is not ready to be that out. This causes strain. Others have family members whom they protect by trying not to be in their face about their being gay, and now they're torn. Do they want to be blessed by these same family members at a marriage ceremony, or do they want to remain quiet? Gay male couples who negotiate open relationships are being told by other gay men to to be quiet about non-monogamous encounters for fear they will jeopardize the legalization of gay marriage. And then there are lesbian and gay couples who don't want to mirror a system which they feel doesn't seem to work. After all, heterosexuals have a near 50% divorce rate. One couple I counseled decided to marry but not involve their families out of respect. They both always visit their families separately for the holidays and feel it's the right thing to do, to not cause discomfort to others. I told them this is internalized homophobia, which is the acceptance of prejudice and discriminatory messages received by those who want homosexuality to be kept a secret. I ask them what I ask all my lesbian and gay clients, which is this: would you keep your relationship a secret if you were with a member of the opposite sex? To which they said, no. Legal marriage is prompting gays to come out of the closet even more. Those who are could not be more excited to jump in and validate their long invalidated relationships. Those who would rather stay hidden are experiencing the bind of wanting legalization while addressing their internalized shame and fear of publicly acknowledging their homosexuality.
That was Joe Court, a gay clinical social worker and sexologist, author, lecturer. Joe, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Our number, by the way, is 888-477-9499. That's a pretty powerful and compelling essay. I want to comment first on your thoughts about internalized homophobia. Explain this and tell us how that gets played out.
Well, often people hear it and they think of it in terms of politics. And my whole thing in working with clients is the psychological effects of those politics. So people, what I like people to remember is we were gay and lesbian children, and we've internalized all the negative messages that we've heard. We're like little gay spies, little gay child spies. And we listen, and we don't know why it matters necessarily as children, but it does. So that when you finally do come out, you are living with those messages. You've been taught to hate the very thing that is inside of you. And you've accepted those messages so that now you're living your life from someone else's point of view and what they want, not what you want.
I'm curious. I want to hear from Charlie first. And any of this ring true to you? Does it feel right about messages you got in childhood?
I think that's absolutely right. I grew up in a Pentecostal home, and we all know how that plays out. And so growing up wasn't very easy at all, and there's so many young gay teens that are suicidal or depressed and suffer from anxiety, you know, and I know that I did as a teen, and you know, did a couple of years of therapy, which has helped. So yeah, I certainly agree.
And I'm curious about you also, Sandra.
I'm very lucky in that I came to this decision kind of later in my teenage, early 20s. I have a sister who is out and very good role model. My first boyfriend and then, of course, Charlie have been very wonderful people, and it's made the whole process of coming out easy. But I see what goes on in the rest of the community, and also we have friends who are in the closet who are, you know, want to be out, but they can't. Part of that is it's the families. They just don't want to disappoint, and they use that term, and I it's hard to say you're not disappointing when you are who you are.
Yeah, I'm curious. What about your family, Charlie?
We're on very good terms now, and it took a while. It did, and it took a lot of acceptance. I think it took a good 10 or 12 years.
Having a doctor boyfriend doesn't hurt.
You know, I tend to date, you know, a doctor or an accountant, you know, where I just try and be as true to myself and my upbringing as I can, and you know, and to live as upstandingly as I can. And I, you know, my father calls me now. He tells me he's so proud of me. I just went home and spent what was 5 days now, 2 weeks in Hatteras just a couple weeks ago.
So I wanna follow up, and Joe, you can join me on this, but I'm curious about what would happen, do you think, with both of you? If marriage was legalized, you decide to have a formal wedding, how do you think your families would react?
My family, I think, would be very happy to be a part of that. And I think Charlie's family would, too.
They've certainly come around.
Yeah.
So I'm curious, Joe, what's your experience clinically? What does it take for gay and lesbian couples to open up to their families, and what kind of responses do they get?
I always tell them the responsibility is on you to teach your family that homosexuality and being gay and lesbian is okay and the right thing for you and not as dangerous or unsafe as a lot of people have been taught to believe. So what they do, what they spend time in my office doing is getting ready, getting through the fear, coming back after they tell them, and usually there's a little bit of a distance from family members, parents, because of anything other than their own discomfort and their own, they have to integrate the information themselves, just like gays and lesbians do. I always say gays and lesbians come out of the closet, and the families go immediately into the closet, and they have their own closet to come out of. And I just have them be patient, but also persistent that we are going to do this, we are moving forward, sort of like this couple that you have on the show today, sort of saying, this is who we are, we're good with this, we want your blessings.
Yeah, and I like the idea of being teachers, because like it or not, they are teachers.
Yes.
And like it or not, so they teach based on what they do, what they say, and more important, how they say it. So I would imagine if they come out to their families and say, this is who I am, like it or leave it, that's one kind of teaching. And another is if they come out and understand that their families might have a great deal of difficulty and approach those difficulties with compassion.
Which I try to instill, because they'll come back and say, can you believe it's been 2 months and they haven't even said anything, and we told them we're getting married, and I say, they might not know what to say, they might not want to say the wrong thing. You have to allow them to be, you have to teach them, as you said and I said, and also allow them to say the wrong thing. You're both going to say the wrong thing until you get it right.
I'm curious about couples where there's a conflict. I've got friends of mine. One of the partners is a psychotherapist in New York. The other one lives in North Jersey. And one of them was in a heterosexual marriage and ended very ugly. And the other one had never been married. So, you know, the one that hadn't been married, you know, she hears the law passes in New York and she's thrilled. She can't wait to get married. And yet the other partner, who's had kind of a traumatic experience with marriages,
Been there, done that,
not so sure about it. So, you know, like every other couple, not everybody's on the same page when it comes to getting married.
You know, and that's true. What you just described is sort of normative. I see with straight couples all the time. The difference with gay couples and lesbian couples is that if one is not that out or doesn't want to be that out or is torn, it can break up a relationship.
Hmm. I wonder, and I'd like to talk to all three of you about the social political pressures in the gay community. Is there political pressure to get married when it's available? Joe, we'll start with you.
You know, I don't know. I don't know. I know that there's a lot of controversy and a lot of debate about what's right for people and what telling each other what to do. So to be honest with you, I don't know about the political climate of this, but I do know, like I put in my essay, that even myself, when I talk about openly gay, open non-monogamous relationships, I've been told by gay men, politically, be quiet until we get what our needs are met, because we shouldn't talk about that. It's going to be work against us.
It's interesting. I was watching both of the gentlemen in the studio when you made that statement in your essay, and they were both nodding their heads. I'd like to follow that up, Santa.
Well, I mean, first off, there are heterosexual married couples who have open relationships. So that's a whole different point. There is some culture in the gay community, especially the younger gay community, that half the fun of being gay is not having to be monogamous, and that they think that by conforming to get married or settle down, that they're violating the spirit of, you know, the fun of being gay. I don't know if I agree with that, but I've heard that statement said many times.
I've heard that too.
Yes, and I also I feel the same as Sandra does.
So I've got a question then of you, Joan. We don't have too much time before we have to close. So, you talked about many gays and lesbians not wanting to have the same marriage as heterosexuals because, like you said, we're getting married, you know, it's under, we're getting divorced, it's under 50%, but it's still a very big number. So what does the ideal look like?
You know, a lot of the couples, what they don't understand, so they don't want to mirror what straight people are doing. They want to be able to have the freedoms that we've always had. But what they don't know, and I don't think I knew either, I had to educate myself, are the legal ramifications, like the attorney you had on here, to really explain that what happens if you, like a few years ago, I came upstairs, my partner was on the floor, his head was bleeding, he'd fell and hurt himself, and I had to call an ambulance. We went to the hospital, and you're confronted right away with, you know, like couples aren't thinking, what are you going to do in that situation? If you're not married, you don't have the rights, you don't have, you're not legal kin. So what's happening is people are having these debates, but they're not educating themselves.
Hmm. Well, unfortunately, on that note, we're going to have to end. Joe, I want to thank you so much for joining us, and thanks for the wonderful work you do.
Oh, thanks for having me. I love it.
Well, my guests who have been hanging around with me for an hour now are Charlie Burris and Sandra Schlichter. And like I've said, Charlie's a retired nurse and a fine artist. Good luck.
Thank you so much for everything.
Yeah, I can't wait
to
take
a great
look at your art. I'm glad.
Thank you.
Sandra is an anesthesiologist here at the University of Pennsylvania. Thanks, Sandra.
Well, thank you. This was a really great experience.
Yeah, it was great.
A pleasure.
Great getting to know you. Next week on Voices in the Family, we're going to be talking about retirement, what it looks like and feels like these days, who's able to enjoy it, and who might want to and not able to. Well, if you've got a question, show idea, or comment, we're at voices@whyy.org, and you can reach me at drdangottlieb.com. For archive editions of the show, you can visit our website at whyy.org/voices, or you can find us on iTunes. The engineer for today's show has been Fred Snyder. Thanks, Fred. Elizabeth Perez Luna is our executive producer of audio content. Our interns are Emily Haas and Evan Pliz. Evan, it's back to school time. We will miss you. Catch you during the winter break. Mike and Scott's our executive producer. I'm Dan Gottlieb. Enjoy your week, my friends.